Hey everyone, this is Russ Thornton, and welcome to another episode of the Wealth Care Advisor Spotlight. Today, I'm excited to be joined by a friend and colleague and a long-time Wealth Care Advisor, Scott Davison. Scott, welcome.
Well, thank you, Russ. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so why don't we start, Scott, by just telling us a little bit about who you are, where you're based, and tell us a little bit about the work you do.
You bet. Well, thank you. Yes. So born and raised in Metro Detroit, and went to University of Michigan, go blue. And then after that, I joined a public accounting firm based in Michigan called Plante Moran. It's a regional firm. I think it's currently about the 11th largest in the country at this point. Although I have my master's in accounting and my CPA license, after doing that for a couple of years, I realized that was not a great fit for me. So I transitioned over to the wealth management group within the accounting firm. And that was a great learning experience. Got to work with high net worth individuals and a variety of tax situations and estate planning situations, and really cut my teeth there, gained my CFP in the process. But for a while I was there, I realized that I kind of want a little more freedom to practice the way I wanted to practice and have the ability to work with people from a variety of backgrounds, not just the ultra high net worth sect. So I kind of knew that I wanted to go independent and do my own thing, but I really didn't know how to do it. The only thing I knew is that when I worked at Plante Moran back in 2008, when everything was falling apart, our clients would get their quarterly performance reports and they would not enjoy them. Needless to say, lots of red, lots of negative numbers, as I imagine everybody else was suffering at the same time. But the one thing that did resonate with me is if I could sit them down and show them a report, shown they still were on track to achieve their goals, or maybe they had to make some tweaks, but we could still figure it out and get them back on track to achieve their goals, that they necessarily would not be happy, you know, with the losses or whatnot, but they would be okay. We would kind of talk them off the edge a little bit, off the ledge a little bit. And so that kind of stuck with me, saying, hey, this software, you know, at the time called Financeware, this is really powerful stuff. This thing right here can help reframe the conversation between advisors and clients and make them focus on what is most important to the client, i.e. the goals they have or the life they want to live. And so that stuck with me. So when I went independent, I said, I don't know much, but I do know that I want to use this Financeware software. That led me to WealthCare, who, you know, owns and created Financeware, which has now since been rebranded as GDX360. And that's what's brought me here today.
So just timeline-wise, when did you wind up connecting with WealthCare as an advisor? When did you leave Plante Moran and when did you join WealthCare? What was the time frame around that?
So I left Plante Moran in May, June of 2012. My wife is a veterinarian. She received an internship in Boise, Idaho. So we moved out there and Plante Moran didn't have an office. So it was kind of like a natural break for me leaving. That year off that she had that internship, I had a year off while she worked that internship where I could kind of create how I wanted to build my own business and how I wanted to reenter the workforce. And so I started having conversations with WealthCare in 2013. And it was a funny conversation because I called them and said, hey, you know, I'm interested in your financial plan software. And they said, hey, by the way, we offer this suite of back office support services for financial planners in case you're interested. And I said, yep, I'll take all of them. And that's kind of, you know, how I got connected with WealthCare.
Got it. And just to clarify, I think you said that you were using Financeware, now GDX360, at Plante Moran. And so that was kind of the bridge for you to kind of land at WealthCare. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, now granted, WealthCare, you know, and I'm not even saying this as a plug, but truly, and I think you would agree with me, Russ, you know, they do provide us with some great back office support so that any independent advisor can, you know, ramp up as much as they want and get as much support as they want, whether it be compliance or bookkeeping or, you know, what have you. But truly what opened the door for me with WealthCare was knowing how powerful the Financeware now GDX message is with clients and how it could be. And I just knew I wanted to build my practice around that. And that's what led me here.
So just something I'm curious about, based on your experience using the software Financeware at Plante Moran versus coming to WealthCare, did you see like any glaring differences, like a compare and contrast, or did you feel like Plante Moran was kind of using the software as you use it today?
There was definitely some similarities and some differences. I will give Plant Moran a lot of credit for being early adopters of Financeware and seeing the value of it way early on. I mean, I think Financeware was incepted back in 1999, and I believe Plant Moran started using that shortly thereafter. And one of the first things Plant Moran would do is, hey, we got a new client on board. Let's put together a Financeware plan for them. So, well, you know, so Financeware and Plant Moran together, I would say at that point, you know, made a lot of sense. And I love that we always created that plan for a client right off the bat there. The difference would be how it's used in terms of reporting. I would argue that's a departure. One thing I always felt that was great about Financeware is that, okay, if back into go back to 2008 again, if this is the thing that can help a client feel better or more comfortable, showing them this plan that shows they have a high confidence, they're still able to live the life they want, then why don't we report this out too? I mean, I know a lot of advisors do, you know, standard issue quarterly performance reports, and if that's something they want to do, that's fine. But why not supplement it with something that also looks forward? Because to me, a problem with a performance report is it only looks backwards. And at that point, an advisor is acting more as a reporter and not an advisor. I mean, we can all, you know, work for a newspaper and say, hey, a hurricane hit Florida yesterday. And of course, that sucks for Florida. But really, the question is, when's the next hurricane coming and what can we do about it? And to me, you know, that's something we can do with GDX 360 / you know, I guess officially I'm going to start calling it GDX because that's a new name, but you know, formerly known as Financeware, now GDX 360. But using GDX, one thing I liked about it is it always was forward looking. And that's something I was able to do at WealthCare, is I could be forward looking and on my quarterly reports include that GDX report that says, yep, you're still on track, or no, you're not, let's make some changes. And I do believe it was that proactive nature of this reporting that I do think has helped a lot of my clients as we've gone through some weird stuff, especially say March of 2020. I think I had one call from a client saying, you know, who was concerned about the markets, and really that client wanted to just dump a whole bunch of cash in because he thought it was at a low point. So I took that as a really positive sign. I was excited. That meant that, you know, even though things were very strange in March of 2020, my clients weren't spooked. They were committed to their plans. They still felt confident and comfortable because I was showing them a plan saying, yep, we're still on track and maybe we have to make some tweaks, but hey, this is what we're doing. This is what we're going to do. And I just think it's a really great way for an advisor to practice.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Clearly, you and I are both fans of WealthCare and GDX 360 and kind of the unique planning process we bring to the table. We could probably spend the rest of this conversation just talking about that. But this podcast is really about showcasing you and the work you do. And I know you already mentioned you've got your CPA license, your master's of tax, you have your CFP. But Scott, is there anything unique from your perspective, anything unique about who you are, who you serve, and how you serve them beyond some of the things you've already mentioned?
That's a good question. Let's see. I think one thing that's, I don't want to say unique to me because I think you do this too, Russ, is that we've drawn a line in the sand and kind of said, yep, this is what the industry does as a norm, and this is how I want to do it. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, following the typical industry model, which I would characterize as build your business and, you know, by all means do it. I mean, the more people you can help, the better. And then once you reach capacity, then sure, bring on some staff. And then once they reach capacity, bring on more staff and grow your firm and build this book and do your thing. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But it just wasn't me. I've kind of always envisioned myself as one man operation or a small shop, hang my shingle outside and say, hey, you know, I do financial planning and I've got, you know, X amount of capacity. I can work with this many families. But once that capacity is reached, that's it. There's no more. Yes, I know I could probably hire somebody and train them up and bring on more people, but I just, you know, for me and my lifestyle, wanting to be with my family, want to have almost control on my clients, not because I'm a control freak, but just because I truly enjoy speaking with my clients and working with them. And so I want to have that personal relationship and make that as close as I can with that small group of people I work with, that I've just kind of decided, hey, well, I'm going to work with, you know, 55, 60 families and that's all there is. So, you know, essentially I reached that target maybe about a year ago or so. So I stopped taking on new clients, which is a weird thought because I know one thing that's always been beaten in my brain, and maybe you too, Russ, is, you know, if you're not growing, you're dying. And I know there's some truth to that, and I'm not blind to it. But, you know, right now I got small children and things are fine. I can pay all my bills and live comfortably. So, you know, for right now, I just kind of hit pause and said, I'm not taking anybody on right now. And who knows, maybe my kids will go to school and then go to college, and I'll have more free time and I'll take on more clients. But for now, I've decided just to stop growing the business. And I would argue that's probably the biggest difference I do in regards to the practice. I would say the other thing I might do, and I don't know how unique this is I use what I call my barbell approach, where since I'm 39 and I plan on practicing for several more decades, I can't just work with older clients or retired baby boomer clients. I need to also work with clients of my own generation, which I enjoy doing as well, because, I mean, heck, I relate to them on a personal level very closely. Just because if I just worked with nothing but baby boomers, essentially they'll retire and pass on one day, and stats aren't good that you retain those dollars all the time. So I need to have a younger generation coming up and growing their wealth that I can build my practice around in my later years. And so I would argue that my barbell approach is you take one baby boomer for every one Gen Y, Gen X person, and it kind of balances out a little bit, because the vast majority of my revenue is derived from the baby boomers because they currently have the wealth. But at the same time, that wealth will trickle down to Gen X and Gen Y, and they're still working and still saving, and it'll sort of flip at some point here in the future.
Yeah, interesting. I'm glad you shared that. I was going to ask you about that, so you kind of beat me to the punch. But with regard to having reached, like, at least your short-term lifestyle practice goals, you've got a good client roster, a good level of revenue that you're happy with. You don't feel the need to grow beyond that, at least just not for growth's sake. Have you kind of thought about, like, what might change that in the future? Like right now, like if you have someone approach you, they're referred to you, let's say, or they find you online, how do you handle that? And then if, let's say, one of your clients were to, God forbid, pass away or something like that, would you replace them with another client, or is that a bridge you just cross when you get to it?
That's an interesting question. I have reflected on that a little bit. And I've been very fortunate. I always count my blessings, and anytime I get a referral, I still consider it a blessing, even if I'm not actively taking on new clients. And my referrals or my new prospects come in one two flavors. It's either a referral from a current client or a friend or a family member. And, I just politely thank the referral source and say, thank you for thinking of me. I take it as a huge compliment that you'd be willing to refer your friend or family member to me. And I explain the situation and how I'm not taking current clients. And I always, and truthfully say this, which is, you know, right now, based on my lifestyle and my time commitments, I have to limit my capacity, because if I spread myself too thin, I'm no good to anybody, new clients and current clients alike. I'm not giving everybody the attention they need. And that message has really been accepted well, I think, by both my referral sources and the prospects that I politely decline, where I'll just, you know, explain that to them and my situation. And I would argue that, you know, it's, if anything, it's actually reinforced my client loyalty, which might sound weird, but for example, a lot of my clients will refer clients. And as soon as I tell them, sorry, I'm not taking any more, I want to spend more time working with my current clients is like you, and spend more time with you, then they're sort of like, oh, well, that's refreshing and that's nice. Which, you know, I can't claim that I knew that was going to be the reaction up front. I was kind of dreading it, but it turned out to be kind of a little bit of a silver lining. And then the other flavor of prospects I get is, I'd say 50% of my prospects come from online. They just call me out of the blue saying, hey, Scott, you know, saw your website, interested in working with you. And I just politely explain to them as well the same capacity limits I have. But I've never had anybody, you know, really push back on that. They all seem very accepting of the message, and if anything, complimentary of the fact that I've made the personal choice to not accept more clients, to focus on my family and focus on the clients I currently have.
Well, I think it draws a nice parallel between the work you do for your clients and, you know, the encouraging them to have a plan and a strategy and, you know, be deliberate about, you know, how much is enough financially. And I think the fact that you've clarified that and are kind of living that in your financial advisory practices is rare and pretty cool. So I'm glad you shared that with us. Thinking of, your, 55 or 60 clients or so, and the work you've done over the years, what's a favorite client success story that comes to mind for you, Scott?
Ooh, that's a good one. I would say that this is, I want to say it's not overly common, but it's something that's probably happened, 3, 5, 6 times in my career. And every time it's been so satisfying that I savor it each time. One common thing I hear, and this is not unique to me, I'm sure you probably dealt with this too, Russ, is I'll have a prospect or somebody coming to me and they say, what's my number? Or I don't think I can retire. I met with advisor XYZ, or I have my old advisor and he says I have to keep working until I'm 65. And really, to me, it's just a case of a client wanting to be told answers, a client having certain goals and certain priorities with their own personal ranking system, which I know, Russ, you're different from me and I'm different from you, who's different from Bill down the street, et cetera. We all have a different customized, personalized ranking system of what's important to us. For some people, they want to retire as soon as possible. Other people, they just want to work till they die because they love their job that much. Other people, they want to make sure they can leave a certain amount behind to their heirs or to charity. Other people, if they die on their deathbed of $1, they're okay with it. So we have all these different conflicting priorities and everybody has a different ranking system for them. And so a lot of these clients that come to me from the previous advisor who just was very focused on investments and not really on their goals and what they're trying to accomplish, they had all these questions that were never answered. And so for me, what I found most satisfying the way we practice using GDX here at WealthCare when done correctly is I can clarify things in terms of, okay, tell me what's most important to you. Okay, great. You gave me a list of 7 goals. Please rank them for me. What's the most important thing? Oh, you want to retire as soon as you can. That's great. Oh, and you don't care about leaving too much money behind and you're kind of moderate on risk. Okay, I can work with that. We create the financial plan using the GDX software, come back to them saying, okay, here's what I heard you say. Please look at these assumptions. Do you agree with what I put in? Yep. Okay, great. Thank you for confirming that everything I put in here is accurate. Are you comfortable? This plan has a very high confidence level. It has a very high likelihood of working out for you. It hits all these marks that you told me, and it says you can retire next year at 57 instead of working to 65 like you thought you had to. And Russ, and I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but this truly does happen sometimes, is you'll get a client in a meeting and they might get emotional because you kind of changed their world a little bit because they thought they're going to have to work for another 7-10 years. All of a sudden, no, you can retire now. Here's the compromises you may have to make. Are you comfortable making those compromises? And assuming they are, it goes from being this extra decade of work to being, oh my goodness, I'm going to put my notice in next month. And clients will get emotional about that. And it's very cool. And, it doesn't get old. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, that's, I don't know if there's any more rewarding part of a job than those kind of interactions and experiences with clients. And so to take that idea and maybe extend it just a little further, what would you say is the biggest challenge that you help people address or solve in your work?
I would say the biggest challenge that I deal with since I, moved downstream from doing just high net worth work, moving down to people who have been very successful, but just don't have tens of millions in the bank, is they're trying to find that sweet spot of, okay, I'm doing pretty well. I've got some investments. I've got a good income. How do I figure out when I can retire? And for some reason, that's just the client question I get the most, that they're most perplexed by, because they see it as this light switch that they flip of, okay, the moment I flip the switch, there's no more income and I'm drawing down assets and I'm subject to the fate of the market and it's going up and going down and what that does to me. And so I would argue that's the question I get the most of is, okay, how do I retire? And then I would argue that the most underrated thing an advisor can do is really, handhold a little bit for the first couple of years of retirement, because it's such a departure for a client that's worked, 35, 40, 50 years sometimes, in an industry and they're trying to transition to this new lifestyle and they're still concerned. They still have hangups. And then of course, God forbid the market drops in the first year or two of a client's retirement, they have a lot of concerns there. So really, it's just spend a lot of time with those clients who are recently retired, checking in with them, making sure they're okay, make sure they're feeling all right. You know, but granted, the good news is if you, you know, if we practice correctly, have a financial plan in place, that we can pretty much roll with any punch that's thrown our way.
Well, speaking about rolling with punches, what would you say, Scott, has surprised you most about your work?
I would say it's the mental switch for me as an advisor. And I feel like there's a prevalent notion out there amongst advisors that you just have to have this message that appeals to as many people as possible to attract as many prospects as possible, to bring in as many dollars as possible, and hit all the sales goals and targets that, you know, you and your firm may or not may have put on you. But for me, the biggest light bulb moment would have been when I realized I don't have to make everybody happy. I only have to make 50, 60 families happy. and you can really target your message to who you are and to whom you're trying to attract. Because I honestly believe that if, you know, you have to like your clients and your clients have to like you, and that's at the most basic level. It doesn't matter how great an advisor you are. If your clients don't like you or you don't like your clients, it's not going to be a great relationship. So really, it's about putting that right message out there to attract the people that most are aligned with you and will click with you and you'll click with them. And keeping those 50, 60 families happy. I don't have to make everybody happy. I just have to make them happy. And for me, that's the thing I remind myself pretty much every day.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's such a fresh perspective in what is largely a very sales-driven culture around financial services and financial advice. So, and again, I applaud you for not just embracing that, but kind of living it out through the fact that you've kind of closed your doors for new clients for the time being and are focused on taking care of your clients and spending time with your wife and your kids while they're young. And I know you mentioned before we hit record, you're taking some time off later this week to go on a trip with some family. So I don't think it gets any better than that. So I think that's a fantastic anecdote as far as a kind of a light bulb moment for you. So thanks for that.
My pleasure.
So I'm always interested to get people's perspective on this one. So if a college student, let's say a University of Michigan junior or senior, let's say they listen to this, Scott, and they're like, wow, what Scott's describing sounds really cool. It's something that I'd like to learn about or maybe pursue a career in. So if you're talking to a University of Michigan, let's say junior, rising senior, that might have an interest in becoming a financial advisor. What advice or guidance would you give to someone like that?
I would argue that you really need to apprentice somewhere and work at a great firm that it will show you the ropes and invest in you and you know, teach you the right way to do things and the right way to practice. I consider the reason why I was able to make this work professionally was because of my time working with some great independent advisors at Plante Moran. They, you know, invest in me and spend the time with me. And in turn, I gave them, you know, many good years and hours of service and, you know, it was a symbiotic relationship there. I think a mistake some advisors make is they try to go independent too soon, too early, and they don't necessarily know the right way to practice yet. And I understand everybody practices differently and there's many different ways to practice and be successful. But I guess my biggest takeaway is go learn from someone first. Go learn the tools, go learn the rules, how to practice and learn every aspect you can of financial planning because it's so wide and comprehensive. I mean, we got tax planning, estate planning, insurance planning, investment management, education planning. I mean, there's so many different facets and you can't learn that overnight. I mean, I feel like I wasn't even qualified to manage a relationship by myself, even a simple relationship until I had 3, 4, 5 years experience in the realm. And so, you know, I would just recommend any young person coming out to get that first. I mean, you can always, and also there's no right or wrong way for you. Everybody's different. So, I mean, some people might thrive staying with a traditional firm and they like that structure and they can do well there. And that's great. Other people, they want to go independent, have their own practice. That's great too. But if you do want to go independent, all I can say is please, please, please get the experience first, figure out what you're doing, how to do it correctly, and then take the leap.
And when you're talking about experience, are you referring to like technical chops, or is it more just kind of the real world, like client facing experience, operational experience, like how to run a, you know, how to work with people profitably and kind of figure out your client service model, or is it kind of all the above?
I would argue it's all above. And that's the beauty of it, is if you are working with an operation or a company that is doing a great job, they will teach you all of that in terms of there's the client interaction and client management. Okay, how do you respond to a client? What type of wording do you use? You want to sound professional, but at the same time, you don't want to sound cold and like a robot. How do you present something? How do you be sensitive to somebody's emotions or feelings in a meeting? How do you take that in? How do you gauge it? So there's all that interpersonal interactions and how to deal with people, how to deal with clients that, you know, you have to see somebody do well so you can emulate them and then adopt your own style and put your own twist on it. But then also it's all the technical chops you mentioned. I mean, you know, have you done a Roth conversion? On the surface, it's a simple concept. Okay, yeah, we're moving dollars from an IRA, a traditional IRA pre-tax, over to a Roth IRA. But if you've never done before, do you even know what paperwork's required? Would you do tax filing? Do you not? What's the pros and cons? You know, all these things that are, you know, learned on the job. And if you have great training, then you will do them correctly. And then you'll always do them correctly from that point forward. And I think that's why it's really great to have a mentor who can sort of walk you through it all.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think that's great advice. So as we start to wrap up, I've got a couple more things I want to ask you before we wrap up our conversation today, Scott. But before we get to those, we've covered a lot today. I'm sure we could probably talk for another hour without, you know, breaking a sweat. But among the things we've talked about, if there were one thing that other advisors listening to our conversation could take away from our discussion today, what would you want that one thing to be?
Be forward-looking. I think that too often we're mired in the past and past performance and performance reporting and comparing performance of, you know, portfolio X, our portfolio, let's say, versus portfolio Y, i.e. in a competing advisor's portfolio. But it's such a simplistic notion that doesn't indicate squat that I would argue that has been the biggest way I've been able to differentiate myself in terms of the competition, because let's just say you're meeting with a prospect and that prospect is meeting with 3-4 advisors and the other 3 advisors have all said the same stuff more or less, which is, hey, we have this portfolio, it's going to outperform. We have this investment committee, they're all doing this great stuff. And, you know, look at this performance, look at all these different things. I feel like that's such a trap. If you live by performance, you're going to die by it, because, you know, these things are cyclical and sometimes an advisor may outperform, other times he or she may underperform. And so if you want to trade on that, you're really setting yourself up for some tough conversations in the future. And I just rather skirt that whole issue and acknowledge the fact that I can't control the market. I can't make it go up. I wish I could. So let's focus on and control everything else we can. We control how much a client spends, how much, by that I mean control. The discussion with the client has to accept this and sign on. But in essence, the client can control how much they spend, how much they save, how much risk they're taking, how much they're trying to leave behind to heirs and charity. Are we being tax efficient? Are we trying to minimize fees? We have some degree of control over all these variables. So let's live there. Let's spend most of our time focusing on these things that we can control. Let's spend less time on the thing we can't, which is let's try and overperform the markets. That's just, to me, a sucker's game. I don't want to do it. I refuse to do it. So for me, that's been very successful. Once again, that bring it back to my original point, which is focus on the future. When you focus on performance, it comes down to performance reporting, which is all mired in the past. It's what you do last month, last quarter, last year, 10 years, inception to date, whatever it may be. But if every single performance report has the same disclosure, which is past performance does not guarantee or indicate future outcomes, then why are we spending so much time talking about it? Yes, I mean, of course, we'd all love to outperform and, you know, every client would love to have great performance. But at the same time, it's in the past. We can't change it. It's locked in. So why spend all this time, you know, sifting through past performance reports? Let's look to the future. Great, this happened in the past. We can't change it. What are we looking at going forward? Are you still on track to live the life you want? Because that's the only benchmark that matters. Are you able to live the life you want? And that's what I'm concerned about. And I believe that a lot of advisors and their clients would benefit from that type of approach.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. As you're well aware, the founder of our firm used to describe it something along the lines of, do you want to be a reporter talking about stuff that's already happened, or do you want to be an advisor talking about stuff that's, you know, that we can influence how it might happen in the future? So I think that's a great takeaway for our listeners, and I appreciate you highlighting that. Scott, we've talked a bunch about this already. It's kind of peppered in and out of our conversation, but how would you say that WealthCare has most helped you and your clients over the last, you know, several years?
It's allowed me to be me. By that, I mean, they've given me such an open architecture where I can build the practice the exact way I want. When I first started working in WealthCare, nobody sat down and said, here's what we're going to do. Here's your sales goals, and here's what you have to hit. And this is the type of client you need to bring in, and all these different things. And there's nothing wrong with having goals or structure. I'm not saying that that's bad, but I kind of already had that vision in my brain of what I wanted my practice to look like. And they just said, okay, great, go run, go do it. And we're here if you need you. Excuse me, we're here if you need us. And that's kind of the way it's always worked, is that WealthCare has been wonderful and helped me in the background and taking care of stuff that I don't want to spend much time on, meaning that, you know, I follow all the rules and regulations and compliance requirements, but I'm not an expert in them. I let the compliance department, WealthCare, say, hey, Scott, here's our filings. Here's what you got to do. And I just do it. They run my books. Even though I'm a CPA and I can run my own books, I don't want to. I don't enjoy that work. I want to spend my time with my clients. So I can push that off on WealthCare, and they run my books for me. And that's been fantastic. Even though I'm independent and can decide who I work with and who I don't work with and what type of practice I'm building, I'm still technically an employee of WealthCare, which is fantastic too, because I get the benefits of being an employee of any major firm, which, you know, long-term disability, term life insurance, healthcare, all that good stuff that a lot of times if you're on your own, you kind of have to do on your own. But I'm getting group rates as an employee of a larger firm. So, I mean, it's been a really great marriage from my perspective. They let me run my practice. I feel like I can do what I want, but at the same time, I do get the benefits of, you know, working for a larger corporation, and that's been fantastic.
Looking out, say 5 years into the future, where do you want to be as a, you know, professionally, 5 years from now?
Well, let's see here. So 5 years from now, my kids will be 9 and 6. So they'll both be in school. So maybe at that point, I've opened it back up a little bit. I got more time to take on some new clients. But as far as professionally, I can't imagine it being better than what's going on right now. I mean, I'm just so thrilled that clients trust me to help them and guide them, and that WealthCare has given me the tools and support I need to do that in the way I want to do that. If somebody said, hey, Scott, 5 years from now, you will have taken on no clients based on your own choice, and, you know, your book has grown just because the market's gone up, and, you and your family are healthy, and, you know, everybody's happy, I would take it in a second. Sometimes no news is good news. So, if I can keep doing what I'm doing and keeping clients happy and helping them live the life they want, then I take that as success.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it, right?
Bingo. That's the thing. I mean, one thing that was interesting from my perspective, I joined WealthCare in 2014. So, you know, 7 years ago, and I had no clients, and now I've got a full roster, and it's just been a whirlwind in a good way. And I'm not complaining. I feel super fortunate that to have that relationship with so many clients. And I guess, like I said, that's why I'm so happy with how things are going. If somebody told me 5 years from now, it's gonna be the exact same way, I'd say, sure, sign me up.
Well, I think you've got a fantastic story. And I'm thankful for the opportunity to, you know, for us to share our conversation with our listeners. So thanks for joining and taking part in the conversation today, Scott. If if someone wants to get in touch, learn more, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, the best way is probably just go to my website, because I provide a variety of contact methods there where somebody could schedule a call with me or email me or send me a message. And my website is just www.scottdavison wealthcare.com. So once again, that's www.scottdavisonwealthcare.com.
Well, I think that's a great place to wrap it up. We'll make sure we share a link to your website in the show notes for this episode. Before we call it a day, anything else you wanted to hit on that we didn't cover or that maybe I didn't ask you about, Scott?
Oh, no, I think we ran the gamut. I think we had a great conversation, Russ, and thanks again for inviting me. I always enjoy chatting with you. I know you and I are friends, but at the same time, it's kind of fun to have a little bit of discourse like we did today. So thanks again.
Yeah, well, thank you. And to everyone out there listening, appreciate you joining us today. And we look forward to catching up with you on the next episode of the Wealthcare Advisor Spotlight.